This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast, episode number 19, being recorded on Wednesday, June the 7th, 2006.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
Hello, friends. Robin Goldstein here. As I look around the Schnauzer Studios, I'm saddened by the empty chairs. Sean Meehan. So full of life. He sat right there, 3 feet away from me. And yet, scant hours ago, called to let me know that an emergency root canal would keep him from the studios on this gorgeous Wednesday afternoon. But no worry, I thought. I thought it better than that, but I thought, no worry. Parviz Vitali, my friend, my compadre, a meeting of Jew and Gentile, Hebrew and Arab, Iranian, but nevertheless, hair and no hair. Together, the two of us before had faced the challenge of a Sean-less show and managed to not only persevere, but also thrive. And yet, moments after Sean's call, the phone rang again to inform me that Parviz Vitali's wife had gotten wise and given him food poisoning. Bad turkey. Little irony there, if you understand your global geopolitical situation, and I think you know what I'm talking about. So I thought to myself, Robin, I often think of myself in the first person, Robin, not to worry. Steve Altz, comedian, actor. The song's not over, is it? Oh no, this is the sad part. Comedian, actor, stunt car driver, danger man, fraternity brother, he's going to be on the show today. He's got great stories. Email from Steve. Dear Robin, sorry to be the flake. I can't make the show today. But don't worry, Anthony DeVito, who I mentioned to you as also being a really funny guy, he's going to be able to do the show, and he is hysterical. Almost simultaneously, another email from Anthony DeVito saying, Robin, I'm really sorry, but I just booked an audition for 5 o'clock tomorrow morning. Since I'm in New York, 3 hours later, I won't be able to do the show tonight. I have to get to bed early. But don't worry, Steve Altz is a really funny guy, and he'll be able to carry the whole segment. And so here I sit, in the Schnauzer Studios, episode 19. No lights are on. No love is here. It is, my friends, the episode on the day after 666, an episode that will forever be known as the Schnauzer Logic that Oprah killed. But that doesn't mean that we can't tell a joke. Four pals get together for their weekly golf game at 7 a.m. on a Sunday. One man announces he's moving away, so the others discuss where they're going to get a fourth player. A woman overhears them and asks if she can join in. "Give me a try," she says. They all agree, and the woman replies, "Okay, I'll be there at 6:30 or 6:45. The next Sunday, she shows up right at 6:30. She shoots 5 under par and gets along great with the three guys. The guys ask her to play the next week. She says, "Okay, I'll be there, 6:30 or 6:45. The next week, the woman shows up again at 6:30. She golfs her opposite hand, and again she goes 5 under par. After the round, one of the guys asks her, "How do you decide whether you're going to shoot left-handed or right-handed?" Before I leave for the golf course, I pull the covers off of my husband, who sleeps in the nude," she replies. "If his penis is pointing to the right, I golf right-handed. If it's pointed to the left, I golf left-handed." "And what if it's pointing straight up?" one of the men asks. "Well then, I'm going to be here at 6:45.
Clinton, liberals, dittos!
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of Easta, my friends, son of Easta, and welcome. You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic, episode number 19, being recorded on Wednesday, the day after the day of judgment. It is June 7th, 2006, and my name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host, I'm your buddy, I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman pad attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, and I am thrilled and delighted to welcome each and every one of you, both of you, I guess, technically, to today's show. It's going to be an abbreviated version of Schnauzer Logic, and to be honest with you, when I... got the phone calls this afternoon and the emails this afternoon. Oh, and on the list of notables who were not here, Robin Goldstein, who you may remember from like 3 or 4 weeks ago, a funny guy who has the same name as I do, who is a restaurant reviewer for Fodor's and a writer, and just a funny, funny guy who said, "Yeah, I'd love to be on the show again." He was supposed to also make contact with me to get him on the show, so we had three guests and two co-hosts who both bombed out this week, and I thought to myself, Maybe the universe is trying to tell me something. Maybe the day after 666. 666 is for the devil. 667? Well, that's the neighbor of the beast. But 676, that's Oprah's day, my friend. And then I thought to myself, hey, Robin, you got to do at least a little show. Last week, as you were finishing up your discussion with Jason Nathanson, his wonderful story about his chance random encounter with the woman herself, Oprah Ophelia Winfrey, he let loose a little nugget of knowledge, a little gem of journalism, a little bit o' honey that the engine in his 1988 VW van had blowed up, as they say down south, and then he was heading on a train back to Los Angeles, finishing his trip. And so I thought, well, we got to let people know what's going on with Jason. We're going to do a little abbreviated show today, and since Jason is a radio professional, has been on many, many shows, many, many stations, many, many years, I asked him if he would at least be part of the sort of my temporary fill-in substitute remotely located electronic co-host, and he said yes, the fool that he is. Jason, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Robin. Hello. I'm the only loser that actually happened to make it to the show today.
I don't know that I would make you, I guess technically. Well, I guess we're losers together.
I guess so. It's been that way for a while now, hasn't it? Through KSCO, and now losers gravitate together.
Well, I want to talk to you a little bit about it. We'll get to your story today. Basically, so you may think of yourself as a loser, my friend, but the reality is this show today exists for the sole purpose of hearing your story. And of course, playing episode number 9 of Road Stories from Brian Cox. But other than that... and also, we didn't get around to playing the number one Eurovision Song Contest winner last week, and somebody complained about that. So I figured I got to get that out of the way as well. But other than that, you, my friend, are the reason that we are all joined here today. Bow your heads in prayer and say amen.
And I feel honored. Amen.
There you go. Now, you've been in radio for a long, long time. I mean, shit happens, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what happened?
I mean, I worked at KFI, the number one talk station arguably in the country, and we had guests crap out right and left, and there's nothing worse than that. You're about to go on air, and your guest isn't around.
And so, I want to talk a little bit about your radio experience with you, and also a little bit of background, because we sort of haven't gotten a chance to do that. But as long as we're here, sure. We're going to do the official greeting. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. As always, we say each and every week a good hello to our good friend Kip Adada, because we needed to have Kip here. There we go. Michael's whirling.
Stroke or unload.
Dick Cheney. Harry Whittington. Okay, the gang is all... here. www.schnauzerlogic.com. That is the webpage. robin@schnauzerlogic.com. That is the email address. We're over on MySpace. It is myspace.com/schnauzerlogic. We have more people listening all the time, and I just want to thank people. The blog has been fairly short the last couple of weeks. I think folks know that my mom is unfortunately very, very ill. She is going to be turning 80 in another couple of weeks and was unfortunately, very sadly, recently diagnosed with lung cancer, which is a horrible, horrible thing because she gave up smoking when I was studying for my bar mitzvah. So I was 12, 13 years old. I wasn't 13. I was 12 years old. I'm going to be 49 this year. So she has not smoked a cigarette in, you do the math, 30-plus years. And here at the age of 80, she has lung cancer. So if you smoke, think twice about it because, you know, eventually it may very well come to get you. Anyhow, so you were talking a little bit about your experiences in radio, guests not showing up. Some hosts handle it better than other hosts?
Well, now I'm preoccupied with quitting smoking.
Oh, shit,
that.
Do you still smoke?
Yeah, I still smoke.
Really?
I was just smoking as you did the intro.
Oh, man, I had no idea. I thought you'd given it up a long time ago.
No.
It is horribly. So...
I still smoke.
It is so fucking insidious. It is so horrible. And, you know, on the one hand, I mean, not to be maudlin, but on the one hand, you sort of say to yourself, well, you know, if she had not... if she had not been able to, you know, give up smoking so many years ago, maybe her life would have been shortened, you know, so much sooner. I mean, not that 80 is you know, too young to go, too old to go, whatever that means. Parviz sure. always has these numbers. He always says there's a right number, and he's got it magically figured out. But, you know, a lot of folks, I'm at a point now in my life where I have lots of friends who have older parents, and they suffer from all kinds of malady. I think the most horrible, treacherous are things like Alzheimer's, right, where their mind, their ability to think and communicate goes. My mom, God bless her, is absolutely 110% all there, as big a pain in the ass as she's ever been, as big and, you know, opinionated as she's ever been, interested in discussing, you know, the world and politics and Idol, and she doesn't like this and she doesn't like that, and, you know, she's an older person, so she's earned the right to be cranky. She's got her cranky stripes that she's earned
and
over
she's
the...
A Jew.
Huh? And she's Jewish, exactly, so, you know, she's got double cranky stripes.
Right.
But you know, you say to yourself, well, you understand people, they have parents, and they're not really aware of what's going on in the world, and so at some point, maybe it's time to kind of let go, but my mom is fucking healthy and vibrant and, you know, just perfect, so... It's a horrible, horrible, horrible disease, and so if you are a smoker, you know, think twice about it. I mean, I'm not the first person to say this. I think Keith Olbermann did a wonderful discussion about how he gave up smoking when Peter Jennings died of lung cancer, and obviously much younger, more vibrant than my mom, who's going to be 80, as I said. But anyhow, also
but Peter Jennings had quit too. So I mean, you're giving a mixed message here. Should I quit now or should I not quit now?
Yes, quit.
Okay.
Quit now. I don't think I can make it any clearer. I mean, you give your body... here's the key. If you've been a smoker, the key is to die of something else first. And the best...
Well, I'm trying. I am trying.
And the best way... Stupidity does not count, my friend. And the best way to do that is to quit. I think everybody agrees that, you know, that helps. Anyhow, I didn't mean to get sidetracked on that. But you were... Well, that's a good sound. That brings us both back to KSCO.
I didn't hear it. What happened?
And all the time we've been on the air here, there's been really no sound from the microphones. They've been nice and quiet. And today the springs are. It's Oprah, I tell you. It's that goddamn Oprah. Damn you, Oprah, damn you. But, I mean, what did you have certain hosts who handled lack of guests, you know, that kind of last-minute thing better than others?
Oh, absolutely. When I was working at KGO, I worked primarily with Ray Taliaferro, who we discussed several episodes ago. He was the nighttime host, still
sure.
is, and has been for 30 years. Never really had a lot of guests on his program, and I kind of brought that to his program. And so when guests wouldn't be there, and we would do most of them at phone at 4 in the morning, and that happened a lot, he was okay with it because he wasn't really used to having guests anyway. But other hosts, like Ron Owens, who's also on KGO.
Sure, morning guy for Also Forever. Number one, right?
Yeah, and he is also, he's, you know, kind of a high-strung kind of guy. And if that happened, you didn't want to be around because that's one of the worst things that could happen.
Like what? I mean, well, what did he, I mean, but he, you would think at this point he could probably vamp for 100 hours in a row without having a guest.
No, sure, and most hosts can. It's just the, in those 4 minutes, where you realize, okay, they're not going to show up, and I have to figure out something to do and talk for, you know, 15 minutes or whatever, get to the next break. It's scary. You know, having been behind the mic myself, and as you are, you know, when you are unprepared, that's probably the worst thing, the worst feeling in radio, because you got to sit there and entertain and talk for 10 minutes. And somebody wrote something once. You know, if you're not sure how hard it is to be a talk show host, you say, oh, I can talk, I can do that, no problem. Go in a closet for 12 minutes and just start talking and be funny and be interesting and see how easy or hard it is.
When did funny and interesting...
What was that?
I said, when did funny and interesting become a part of the the equation?
Oh, it never has been.
Okay, cool.
Not for this show.
All right.
But, you know,
thanks,
for others,
dude,
who are actually on radio.
Smoke them if you got them, my friend. Smoke them if you got them.
When you're unprepared and have to do that, it's just, it's tough. And that's what separates the good guys, the talented host from the non-talented host. The host that I just most recently worked for, John Ziegler, there was a period of time, and I don't know, I'm not going to say it was my fault, because it's not. You book a guest, and as the producer, you're responsible, and you get the confirmation. They say they're coming on the program, and then you call, you know, a couple minutes before they're going to go on, and you get no answer. And you get this feeling in your stomach, and it's horrible. And then you call a couple minutes later, no answer. You try all the numbers that you think you had, and no answer. And then you have to tell the host. And this happened quite a few times in a row, and you try to do everything you can to minimize this, but it happens. So it's your fault as the producer.
Sure.
But you didn't really do anything wrong. It's really the guest's fault. But you have to take the responsibility. And
is that why you got fired?
That and so many other reasons. I quit. I didn't get fired.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. That's the story. I forgot. That's the story we're sticking
right.
to. Yeah. That's right. Okay.
The worst time it ever happened, we were doing a remote broadcast. My host, John, had just written a book, and we were at a Borders or something in Orange County. And we had Dennis Miller scheduled to be on the program. And John had been on Dennis Miller's program before, and Dennis supposedly listens to our show and was a fan. And we had him scheduled at 8 o'clock, and we're sitting in front of this audience of people, you know, hardcore fans who'd come to see the show. 8 o'clock rolls around, no Dennis. Now, we're at a remote, and so we're not in the studio. Dennis is calling the studio, and they patch him through to where we are. And so I'm yelling at my assistant producer, you know, what the fuck's going on? They can't find him. He's nowhere around. And I have to tell my host, John, in front of all these people, you got to go on and you got to do something. And the look of terror and anger on his face was something I hope I never have to see again. And I'm sitting there, I'm calling the publicist, I'm calling the number I have for Dennis, and no answer. Turns out he calls back about 8:50 and sounds kind of drunk. And he just forgot. He just totally forgot. And we got him on at 9, and, you know, everything was kind of okay. But it's a horrible, horrible situation.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We'll take a little break at this point. We'll play a little tunage. I want to play... We'll take two little breaks today. And two breaks? Yeah, one to the... Yeah, that ought to work. Cool. We'll take two breaks today. We'll play two songs from the Eurovision Song Contest from countries that we didn't get to last week. We were chided in the blog that we didn't get to the number one song of the Eurovision Song Contest, which was Finland. And so we'll definitely play that in the show. And then there's a group from Spain called Las Ketchup. And I love their stuff. Do you know them?
They're the ones that did the ketchup song.
Thank you very much. They're the ones who did the ketchup song, and they were provided the entry for Spain. So we'll play them next. We'll also get in Brian Cox Road Stories, because I know that if Parviz, when he listens to the podcast at home, as he's going to do, he's going to want to make sure that we keep up with Brian Cox and the Road Stories. This week, I think Brian talks about hecklers, so that's kind of perfect. When we get back, we'll talk to you a little bit more. I'll tell you what, I want to get to your story about the road as well, but the other thing is, I want to talk a little bit about the state of talk radio, because there was a period of time politically where talk radio was maybe the most powerful force in the United States. I don't know whether it's true around the world, but certainly here in the United States, it was forming opinion. Rush Limbaugh was at the lead of that, but there were Rush Limbaugh types all over the place. It feels to me like that power has begun to deteriorate a little bit, but from my perspective, having been both inside it and outside it, I think the people who were inside it frequently look at it as a form of entertainment. This is amusement. This is a performance. And yet they're in a position of setting public policy. And I want to try to talk to you about that as we get back from the break, if that makes sense. Is that
great
cool?
Great topic, Robin. Great topic.
So full of it. But I love you, my friend. All right. We'll take a break. We will put you on hold here. We are talking with Jason Nathanson. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Robin Goldstein inviting you to please stick around.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Maravillosa me puse.
me up.
Oh, yeah.
They're funny.
Keeps me entertained.
Funny, funny comedy.
Those tree-hugging sissies.
And now your host, Brian Cox.
Welcome to Road Stories of the Real Highway Comics. I'm Brian Cox, and you know, if the world of comedy was, say, the Wild Kingdom, you'd probably hear something like this. In the Wild Kingdom of comedy, the only predator that the comedian fears is the heckler. You know, for any public speaker or comedian, it's important to stick to your thoughts, your material at hand. But sometimes this becomes increasingly hard with the amount of distractions you face, like crashing dishes, cell phones going off, and just plain inbreds yelling crap out at you while you're trying to get your point across that took you the better part of a year to write. As a comic, you've got to stick to your guns. You've got to focus. That's the tip. Now, the road story. I had just finished watching David Letterman. The guest was Norm Macdonald, famous Canadian comedian. He was going on and on how he was doing this hell gig in a place called Red Deer, which I know well. This is how fast fame can hit, ladies and gentlemen. One night you're in Red Deer, Alberta, or as they like to call it, Dead Rear, working for $300. The next night you're at the Comedy Store in L.A., the right people see you, and bam, you're on David Letterman. Checking my itinerary for an upcoming tour, I noticed that, hey, I was going to be playing the same place in Red Deer that Norm Macdonald had just played. Oh, great. So I got to the hotel, got checked in, relaxed a little bit, then decided to go to the club. Walk in, expecting the stage to be, like, behind chicken wire. No, it wasn't. I went to the bathroom. Get this. There were two people standing up in one of the stalls. Yeah, doing the nasty. Me being there, they didn't care or share. What a place. I thought, oh, this is going to be a great night. I started my act, and this big biker-looking dude sitting right in the front row started in on me. Yak, 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 yak. He wouldn't shut up. So I had to handle the situation. There was no management in sight to tell the guy to shut up. For all I know, they were in the bathroom. Anyway, I was hitting this guy with all the heckler lines, you know, like, hey, I can't believe out of a million sperm, you were the fastest. Hey, did your mother have any kids that lived? How much did you have to pay that girl to stay with you for an hour? Hey, buddy, you know, I'm being paid to be an asshole. You're doing it for free. Yak, 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 yak. This guy wouldn't shut up. And he was starting to get a little angry. You see, people don't realize that you have a sound system backing you up. You're louder, so you control the situation. Anyway, about 35 minutes of verbal karate went on with this guy. Then I saw it. He pulled out one of the biggest knives I'd ever seen. He was pointing it at me from his seat. Now the bouncers decide to do something. The guy went out. About 20 minutes went by, and who do you think was back sitting in the front row? Right, knife boy, butcher man, whatever you want to call this guy. This time, he wasn't making a sound. He was just sitting there, staring at me, not laughing, not smiling. The whole crowd was watching him. He slowly reached into his coat, and he pulled out this solid metal object. You know what I thought? Gun! No, it turned out he had a gift for me and he wanted to come up on stage and do a little bit of a presentation. I mean, this guy was big. I mean, I had arms like this guy, but they were attached to my ass. He gets up on stage, okay? He pulls this thing out. It's a brass figurine of two pigs doing the nasty. You could hear a pin drop in that room. He said, "Here, it kind of reminds me of you." So I took it, I smiled, he smiled, the crowd smiled. And then I held it up and I showed the crowd, I said, "Look, he gave me a family portrait of his family from the trailer park. Isn't that nice?" So there you go, that's my Letterman story. If I'm ever invited on Letterman, the same club that Norm Macdonald played, and it hasn't changed. That's it for Road Stories of the Real Highway Comics. I'm Brian Cox.
Fun and flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're about 30 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman pad attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. www.schnauzerlogic.com. Robin at schnauzerlogic.com. And if you get the program through iTunes, I don't know if you've noticed recently, because maybe once you've gotten the program, there's no reason to go back to the Schnauzer Logic page on iTunes, because it automatically gets downloaded into your iTunes on Mac or Windows every week. But if you do go back to the Schnauzer Logic page, they've reorganized iTunes now. It will list what other podcasts people who are listening to Schnauzer Logic also subscribe to, which is a weird, weird collection. So if you really want to screw around, what you need to do is you need to, as a subscriber to Schnauzer Logic through iTunes, you need to go and subscribe to some other weird kind of stuff and see if we can get a really interesting mixture there. Anyhow, welcome back. We have Jason Nathanson on the phone. Son of Easter, Jason.
Son of Easter, Robin.
How you doing there?
Good, good, good.
I don't understand why Parviz doesn't get a chuckle every week out of Brian Cox.
I do. That was the first time I'd ever heard it.
Oh, there you go. Brian's a good guy. We love Brian. He's a talented guy. He's got a great voice, and he's funny, funny, funny. I'm not sure that that his stories translate that well into audio. Anyhow, we were talking right before the break about the impact of talk radio, and you've had a chance to think about it here while smoking up. And just to recap, you know, at least in the United States, I don't know whether it's true around the world, but certainly in the United States, last, let's say, 10, 15 years, talk radio, initially on AM, although it's began to move over now into FM with this whole free FM phase, has taken on more than an entertainment quality. It's taken on a political power, if you will. The fourth estate, which is normally considered the press, really moving to the next level. And having and knowing people and having known people who were involved in talk radio, I'm not sure that all of them think of themselves as policy movers. Many of them just see themselves as entertainers who are happy to pull down a paycheck. Is there hypocrisy on the other side of the microphone? What's been your experience working at really a lot of big stations here in California?
Well, I don't know so much if it's hypocrisy. I would agree that there's a little bit of that there. But most of the ones, the really good ones that I've worked with, they see themselves as entertainers first. They understand that their job is to get people to listen, get the butts in the seats for ratings, so the station can then sell ads and get revenue. And you do that by appealing to more of a broader spectrum of people. And if you're really polarizing, that tends to drive away a large segment of the audience. Now, that's not necessarily true for Rush Limbaugh and those guys who got really popular back in the mid-90s. They were really polarizing and still continue to be. But their fame really came a lot because they were reactionary at the time politically to Bill Clinton and the Democrats. And so there was a huge market for that, and I think that's what Air America tried to capitalize on when they started. It was the Democrats and the liberals' chance now to be reactionary to the Republicans.
For those folks who are outside the United States, Air America was a reformed progressive radio network. I guess they don't like the term liberal any longer. They like the term progressive.
Right.
With Al Franken, best known for Saturday Night Live, and Janine Garofalo, some famous people taking on radio hosting jobs. And it certainly hasn't had the impact of Limbaugh and Hannity and Combs and O'Reilly.
Not nearly. And if you notice today, a lot of the buzz around Rush Limbaugh has gone. He's only in the papers these days if he's doing drugs or something like that.
Right.
But he still maintains his audience, but you don't see him in the news
He had a TV program. He had a TV program for a short time.
Yeah. He's not that visible, but he still maintains his listeners because there's people who still agree with him. I can't tell you why the progressive side didn't take off, because there's certainly a climate in this country for that. There's a lot of people who hate the current administration. They hate their politics, and they're angry, and they want to vent. I think the whole Limbaugh effect turned people off of talk radio, and you lost a lot of those progressives and stuff. I think a lot of them went to NPR and music, and then iPods and things like that. and they never really came back to talk radio. So as far as being influential politically, I think talk radio can do a good job at rallying the base, but I don't think the impact is really there. I don't know if it was ever there. I think there was a perception that it was, but it really wasn't. For instance, these days at KFI where I worked, the afternoon hosts, John and Ken, have made illegal immigration their hot topic for the past several years. They were kind of on it before anybody else was, so give them credit for that. But they really have been hitting it hard and hitting it hard and trying to get people voted in and out based on immigration. They had 2 years ago this big campaign to fire one congressman from the area who has been soft on illegal immigration, a guy named David Dreyer. That never worked. They tried as hard as they could, and they have over 1 million listeners a week. They couldn't get this one guy fired from Congress. And that, to me, showed me that the actual political impact is very small when it comes to these people yapping away every day.
Now, let me ask you another question. You worked for Ray Taliaferro, probably as left-wing as you can find on talk radio. I think that's fair.
Yeah. And that's an understatement.
All right, all right. And your most recent gig was working for John Ziegler, who I don't know if I would say he was as right-wing as you can find, but certainly...
No.
Right,
he is conservative. He would describe himself as libertarian, but he's definitely a conservative.
Yeah, libertarians, I think, are right-wing people that don't want to be associated with the religious right, so they call themselves libertarians. And
that's exactly what he was.
Because the reality is Gene Burns is a libertarian as well, and I think that Ziegler's politics and Gene Burns' politics probably couldn't be further apart on many, many social issues. So
Maybe... They'd be more closely aligned than you might think.
But here's my question.
Yeah.
I'm going to interrupt you. Here's my question. And that is,
sure.
Because Ray was on overnight, you know, kind of the whack job, you know, morning hour. Ziegler has a more normal shift. Did Ray believe everything that he said in the microphone? You spent time with him. Does Ziegler believe everything that he says in the microphone? Or is there some hyperbole there to try to get the audience to go, yeah, rah, rah, rah?
Well, I mean, I guess I definitely don't want to give away a whole lot of secrets about these guys, but I would say it's safe to say...
So that would be yes.
That Ray Taliaferro is probably a little more hyperbole than on the show than he is in real life. I think he definitely agrees with the progressive cause.
Sure.
But I think he is one of the guys who tried to be a little more entertainment, and he realizes that the more he can whip things into a frenzy, the more entertaining it's going to be for radio.
Gotcha.
And he wouldn't be out to... I don't think he's ever advocated killing the president, but, you know, he wouldn't go... I wouldn't put it past him to say something along those lines, but in his real life, he would never, you know, kill anybody. Ziegler, on the other hand, definitely was one of the guys that I've worked with who is exactly the same off the air as he is on the air. Believes everything he says, probably gets a little more animated on the air, but he's just as animated and energetic in his speech off the air.
So
he really believes his stuff.
So let me ask you another question. I don't want to put you on the spot here, but
sure.
I think we sort of have a sense from some of the things you've said along the way that your politics are probably closer to the left than they are to the right. Although I wouldn't pigeonhole you, but nevertheless, how do you feel working for as a producer for, because you're not merely the call screener, you're not the guy that's pushing the buttons necessarily and saying, what do you want to talk about? You're the one who's actually helping to put the show together. A producer in talk radio has got a lot of responsibility. It's like the tip of the iceberg. You know, you get to see the host who's big and massive, but below that is a support system that actually puts together 2, 3, 4, 5 hours of radio, depending upon where you're working and what the format is. That's a lot of responsibility. How do you, as a producer, deal with either issues that you agree with or issues that you don't agree with? At what point do you feel that you're selling out?
It's tough. And I came to that realization or the thought that I was selling out several times while I worked at KFI. When I was at KGO, I agreed with most of what Ray would say and not how he would say it necessarily, but I never really had a problem with a lot. One thing that most people, my friends and everybody don't know, when I was at KGO, I was offered a position on KSFO, which is the right-wing station, the sister station.
On air?
Not on air.
Oh,
but
okay.
Producing a new afternoon show that they were starting. I think a guy is still there named Brian Sussman.
Okay, sure.
I worked with him for a week. You know, at this point I'm working overnights and the hours are horrible. And the pay was not that great. And I was offered this opportunity to work normal hours and probably be paid more.
Mm-hmm.
And after working with the guy for a week, I decided I couldn't do it. His politics just were too far out of line from what I believed in, and I turned the job down. Now, when it came to KFI, I had always wanted to work at KFI. I grew up in Los Angeles, and they
classic,
were a great station.
Classic station.
Absolutely. And so the opportunity to work here is something I couldn't pass up, and at the time I was ready to move back from San Francisco to L.A. So I took the job. I didn't really know John Ziegler or his show when I did. And for a while, I really didn't have a problem producing his show because radio, at its essence, radio is radio, and I'm a radio guy. I'm in it for the love of the medium. And so when you produce, you're getting on good guests and stuff, and they're high profile, and that's fun. And whatever they say, that's on the conscience of the host or the guest. But there came a point where we had to come up to San Quentin for the execution of Stan Tookie Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, this was a huge story for
absolutely
those who aren't familiar, but it was all over the country. And this was a former leader of the Crips gang who was being executed last
really
December.
Who apparently in reality turned his life around.
Yeah, apparently, and he wrote children's books, and
right.
I had all the children's books and stuff.
Right, right.
And
I mean, but it was not a spoof. I mean, he really apparently he did what prison is supposed to do. He was rehabilitated.
Sure, and there was a lot of public outcry against killing this guy because of this rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of celebrities behind it, and it got a lot of press in the media. The call waiting is going off, so if that
don't worry about it. We'll cut it out.
So in reaction to all of this celebrity jumping on this bandwagon and getting a lot of press, our station decided, well, somebody's got to speak out for the victims of Tookie and show the other side, which is, I think a very rational thing. So the afternoon hosts on our station, John and Ken, started doing a 5 o'clock hour called Tookie Williams Must Die. Now, a lot of people were offended by this, and it didn't really make me feel
yeah.
that comfortable.
I'm offended right now. No, I am.
I see, but, you know, one side is saying the guy's rehabilitated and shouldn't die, and the other side is saying, well, the guy killed all these people. Let me tell you about his victims and how he shotgunned them, and this is why the guy must die.
Yeah, but making sport of his execution is a whole other thing.
Right, but they would say the other side is making sport of trying not to kill him. They were trying to further their cause, not really thinking about
okay.
the man.
Bullshit.
But,
okay.
you know, and there's two sides to it, but it did make me feel uncomfortable. And as the show that followed theirs, we were on from 7 to 10, they were on from 3 to 7, we obviously shared a lot of issues, and we kept going with the Tookie thing, which, again, made me uncomfortable, but I did it. Then we were told we were going to San Quentin for the execution. And we were going to stand outside the gates, as we knew there'd be thousands of people protesting the execution. We would be the voice of the other side, you know, basically saying, kill the guy. And we got there, and John and Ken did their show, and there really wasn't that many people there at this point. By the time we started at 7, there started to be a lot of protesters.
Mm-hmm.
And we're walking around in the middle of the crowd, and my host is, you know, kind of walking around and getting into confrontations with protesters, and they're surrounding us at this point. They had us picked out, and they decided to assign protesters to kind of box us into this one area. So they wouldn't let us move around.
Mm-hmm.
They were pushing us, and it started, I wouldn't say I was afraid for my life, but it wasn't the kind of situation I wanted to be in.
Right.
You know, this is why I became a producer, to cheer on the killing of somebody, because I am opposed to the death penalty.
Right.
So just being around this and being outside the gates and trying to basically saying, kill this guy, you know, let him fry, really, that got to me. I was probably already thinking of leaving at that point. I'm not going to say that that's the reason that I left.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely was very hard. And I felt at that point like I was compromising what I believed in to put on, you know, this entertainment that I really wasn't behind. And it left me feeling kind of disgusted with myself.
All right. Well, I appreciate the honesty.
Yeah.
I want to do a short show today, so what we'll do is we'll take a quick break here. We'll play the number one song contest winner of the Eurovision Song Contest. It is from Finland. The band, I think, is called Lordi. It's not going to sound Finnish to you. It's going to sound like heavy death metal, and these guys dressed up like Klingons or Vogons or something like that, but it's pretty rocking. And we'll come back. We'll do your short Jewish balding guy in a 1988 VW van, all right? How's that sound
to
you?
Sounds good.
All right, you're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, my good friend Jason Nathanson, has agreed to sit in for our abbreviated show today. Sean Parvis, everyone else, is just bugged out on me, so we're running solo, commando style, as they say. And we'll be back, so stick around.
For more Schnauzer Logic.
The saints are tripled on this sinner's night. No other lamps with no guiding light. The walls come down like thunder.
Welcome back. We're about 50 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein running solo. Going to keep it short today, but we wanted to get to the story with the short, balding Jewish guy in 1988. Jason Nathanson, son of Easter, welcome back. Thanks for hanging in with me today, my friend.
That song you just played, One Something? That was a winner?
That was the number one song in the Eurovision Song Contest 2006. You know, there's some interesting articles in, Europeans, right? There you go. There's some interesting...
Well, I used to think our country was screwed because of American Idol and the loss of our culture, but I guess we're far behind the Europeans.
Well, certainly the Finns. There was an interesting article, I think, in Salon Magazine talking about the history of the Eurovision Song Contest, and one of the things they said is the winner country, the winning country of the Eurovision Song Contest is responsible for hosting next year's Eurovision Song Contest. And I guess Ireland had won 3 or 4 years in a row, and the responsibility and expense of hosting this multinational contest every year effectively bankrupt the Irish National Broadcasting Company. And so the rumor is they started to submit really shitty songs in order to make sure that they didn't win again. And the
I think that was Finland's plan, too.
Tournament fair play. All right, listen, we have the abbreviated show, but when we left people last week, you were basically in Winslow, Arizona.
That was a cliffhanger.
It was a cliffhanger. Dun, dun, dun. Well, let's pick up where we left off, my friend.
So last week, Winslow, Arizona, and I told you that the car was basically dead. While I was chasing Oprah, big puffs of white smoke started coming out of the back of the car, and I thought, oh, this can't be good. So
new Pope?
I was talking to my dad, and he started doing some internet research, and basically everything that we found said, don't drive the car anymore. You basically blown the engine. So we called some mechanics in the morning, and they all told us the same thing. Don't drive the car anymore. What you probably did was blown a head gasket on the engine. It needs to be replaced or rebuilt. So we started looking around at options, decided towing it to L.A. was just as cheap as towing it to Phoenix, where the next biggest body shop was. Towed it back to L.A. At major expense to me and my dad. I took a train back, which was a very annoying experience, sitting next to a guy who'd been doing meth for 2 weeks in Phoenix. And we get back here on Saturday. The car is here. Bring it in.
I think
that guy's gonna
be a guest on Oprah, I think.
Probably. He wrote a book about it.
Wrote a book about it, yeah.
Yeah. And so... Monday, take the car in, and after a couple hours, they say, come on over. Let's talk about what happened. We'll go over there. Basically, what happened, yes, there was oil dripping into the engine and heating up and causing the smoke, but the oil was coming from the dipstick reservoir. What had happened was I felt a lurching motion. I got out to check the oil the day before this happened. I didn't put the dipstick all the way back in its little dipstick tube. Oil came up out of that little shaft, dropped on the manifold, heated up, and was causing the white smoke. So basically there was absolutely nothing at all wrong with the car. And it was kind of like the perfect storm. Because had we not had so many problems with the car already, my dad and I wouldn't have been so gun-shy and so quick to expect that the worst was the problem.
Hold on. MZ has something he wants to say to you. Hold on.
And they're laughing at you.
There you go.
Yeah. Thanks, MZ. You always know how to make me feel better. So, I mean, there was literally no problem. There was nothing that needed to be fixed. There was no gasket. There was nothing that needed to be done. So, at a waste of a couple days and a couple $100, I'm leaving tonight.
And so you're leaving tonight?
Yeah, I'm leaving tonight. Decided to drive through the night because I'm basically going back through everything I've seen already.
You got the baby changing table. You're ready to go. You're just... you're not making the loop again. You're going straight east,
no,
right?
I'm going straight east. And you know what's funny is my friend who I took the baby changing table up north for... They have a crib that needs to go up north.
I would vote against it.
I think
whatever you did last time, don't do it again.
No. So I'm heading east. I'm going out on 10, which is a highway that goes all the way across the country. I'm going to follow that to at least part of Arizona and New Mexico. One of these days I'm going to get to Texas and talk to you from Texas. I know we keep promoting that.
Very exciting.
One of these days it's actually going to happen.
So you had a few days at home. We're playing the music here because we're going to come up to the top of the hour and finish up today's show. So you had a few days at home. You got a chance to restock your provisions, I guess. And Now,
my soul, think about, you know, what I'm doing.
So that's the question. Have you thought about, this is sort of like a chance to do over a little bit.
Right.
Any change in plans? Any change in the philosophy of the trip?
No, I like how I'm doing it, and I thought about coming home and, you know, really doing a lot more planning, which I haven't been doing, but I haven't. I like kind of the slapdash nature of what's going on.
Kind of the drunken squirrel walk around the United States.
Yeah.
So you head back to Arizona.
Head back to Arizona, and I did get to vote while I was home, which is a plus.
Good for you.
I'm very excited about
not,
that.
We had primary elections here in California, United States, yesterday, and
like the lowest turnout of any election ever.
I voted. I went in yesterday afternoon about 4 o'clock to the local polling place, which is a local elementary school. There were a line of people. It looked like the Last Supper if they had all been sort of special needs kind of people. You know, it was a whole line of these older people. They didn't really speak English. They weren't sure what they were doing, and they were like bored, yawning, you know, drooling. I said, well, if you really
the cheese painting of the retards voting.
It was just, there was a bizarre gospel, and I said, and we have the brand newest voting machines here. We have all of these electronic machines with, oh, by the way, the nice thing about the electronic machines is that if you get bored, and there, you can put your name in for every candidacy. So I appear, because you've got a little keyboard, and so you just type stuff in. So I appear on the ballot yesterday in my machine. I voted
for
myself. Yeah, so I'm a candidate for treasurer. I'm guessing
nice.
I didn't get many votes. But Robin Diane Goldstein.
Probably not.
It'll be, listen, the Secretary of State has to list them all, so there you go.
Well, good job. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you very much. So a week from now, we'll be doing our 20th show, which will be a big time, big deal show, so we'll definitely have you back. You have any sense where you're going to be?
Can't drink yet, but close.
Very, very close. You have any sense where you're planning on being about a week from now? I use the word
Texas again.
Yeah.
But you never know.
You're not from Texas, but Texas wants you anyway. So that's what you're thinking? Any stops? Any national monuments? Carlsbad,
I'm definitely stopping at the Biosphere.
Carlsbad Cavern, New Mexico. You're going to go there?
Probably the caverns.
Okay. The Biosphere. Oh, yeah. Mr. Biggs was recommending that on your blog page, randomshow.blogspot.com.
And I went over and checked it out, and it looks really cool. That's the kind of thing I like to do.
Excellent. Well, listen, thank you so very, very much. We wish you, as always, Godspeed and a safe journey, and keep your dipstick plugged in as deeply as possible, I guess, is the moral of this story.
That's the moral of the story.
All right.
Thanks for having me. It was fun. I like the radio talk.
My pleasure. It was good stuff. Tomorrow morning, KSCO, we'll be able to find you there. Is that right?
Absolutely. And if you don't hear it there live, you can always check it out on your blog page.
Thanks for giving us a plug every week. We appreciate that over on...
My pleasure. You know, I look out for my friends, if nothing else.
All right. Take care of myself. Take care of yourself. I'll take care of myself. Be good. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ron.
All right. Bye-bye. And that's what a show with just me sounds like. So now you know. All right. Until next week, I love you, Mom. I miss you, Dad. Say a prayer for my mom, would you please? Show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. We hope that Sean feels better. We hope that Parviz feels better. Steve Altz, Anthony DeVito, Robin Goldstein, and you. Until then, have a great week and take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over!
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.